Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications in the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Phyllis, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here.
So it's always great to catch up with you, not only at this time of the year, but obviously throughout the year. I know you've been very generous with your time, but this is especially good because October is, as you know, National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and DHS plays a big role and has some very big plans for this month. So let's just jump in. What are your themes this year? And what's the message you're trying to get across to the government and the citizenship at large?
We are excited. And I just want to remind everybody that October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, but we are very aware, very vigilant, and want people to learn and understand and actually enjoy cybersecurity every month of the year. So our theme, look at a summary, and then I'll give you the exact themes per week. But this particular month represents an opportunity for us to raise awareness and the American public to gain awareness and for the growing importance of cybersecurity, and really empower our citizens with the tools and resources that they need to enhance their cybersecurity practices. We plan to raise that awareness on a number of important elements to cybersecurity, such as it is a shared responsibility, and every person has that responsibility in creating a safer and a more secure internet and electronic connected environment in all the new technologies that we enjoy. Employees of any organization, federal or private, academic, everybody needs to be trained and vigilant in how to use their particular systems and use them in a way that is safe. Cybercrime. How do we prevent that? How do we identify it? How do we combat it with our partners? You saw PPD 41. The role of DHS is to help mitigate and, if you will, clean up intrusions and help people become stronger. The analogy people use often is we're like firemen. Help prevent the fires and help clean them up. We work hand-in-hand with our partners in law enforcement, whether that's U.S. Secret Service, Homeland Security Investigations, or FBI. Those are the policemen, and those people help find who the criminals are and help enforce and help put them away in orange jumpsuits, if you will. Technology advancements. We want to look at what challenges those present and what great things they add. Our whole theme here is how to enjoy technology and be safe while you're doing it. It adds convenience, it adds fun, and that's what we want. Critical infrastructure, security, and resilience. That is very near and dear to us in the National Protection and Programs Directorate. No one protects a machine because they care about a machine. They protect a machine for what it stores, what it does, what it enables in our way of life. And our biggest message is how that cybersecurity, how that electronic connectivity lights up every other part of our way of life. If you'd like, Jason, I can walk through the individual weeks and how we've apportioned out the different parts very quickly.
Yeah, sure. Give us the breakdown week by week.
So week one, October 3rd to 7th, every day steps toward online safety with Stop, Think, Connect. And that's really looking at how we use that role in Stop, Think, Connect, whether we're technology savvy. We kick off our National Cybersecurity Awareness Month with basic tips. This looks at citizens. This looks at employees. How do we look at physical security? How do we look at cybersecurity? How do we protect ourselves? How do we stay healthy? How do you protect your accounts? How do you keep your machine safe? And overall, please think before you click on that link. Stop, think, and connect. And that middle one is very important. Week two, October 10 to 14, is really cyber from the break room to the boardroom. The big message there, this is a risk equation. The calculus is in any company, large or small, and I spoke to a large group yesterday, looking at how cybersecurity is part of the overall risk assessment in a company. It is not a subset of IT after you buy a printer. It's taking those experts in cybersecurity and the judgment they have and elevating that so that the assets of the company are protected and used in the right way, and you know what assets you're trying to protect, what needs to be backed up, and really how to shift the equation from reacting to things to being willing to hopefully share them as you see them so that others can be protected very quickly as well, see something, say something, and overall be part of an ecosystem where your company is making good, solid decisions, not protecting a $5 item with a $100 lock, but really taking cybersecurity to that next level and making an overall risk consequence decision in your boardroom. Week three, October 17, looking at the technology advances, and we call that recognizing and combating cybercrime, October 17 to 24th, excuse me. But how do we work with our partners in law enforcement? How do we enable our citizens to recognize that seemingly harmless email come in that tells you you won something, or even more innocuous, one that comes in claiming to be from someone you know or someone to whom you report, ask you to click, please be careful. Focuses a lot on our DHS law enforcement components, our Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force, which identifies and locates international cyber criminals as well. They are some of the finest cyber investigators on the planet, looking at financial crimes for many years. Our Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, these teams do some amazing work in identifying, finding, and locking up cyber criminals, especially in the child exploitation side. And our TSA, our Transportation Security Administration, our U.S. Coast Guard, both have a huge piece of cyber resiliency. And finally, week four, because you asked, October 24th to 28th, continuously connected lives. How do you understand your apps? How do you understand the Internet of Things? Everything we live and breathe, including what we eat in the future, may in fact be lit up by electronic logic. And if we don't understand how to protect that electronic logic, it will make decisions that somebody else directed. And that's where we want to make sure we build these things and use these things and enjoy technology, October and beyond.
There's a lot going on throughout every week of the month. I want to go back to week two for a second. I think, you know, from the break room to the boardroom is a great way to kind of bring up the fact that cybersecurity is everybody's responsibility, not just the CIOs, the CISOs, or even just the companies per se. It's everybody. Do you get a sense, based on the people you speak with and the people you meet, that that message is coming across with all the breaches we've seen over the last, you know, 18 months, 24 months? Is that an easier message now than maybe ever before?
I do think it is, Jason, because people are feeling it, and they're more and more starting to understand it. Cybersecurity is, while it will always be intangible, people have heard about all these breaches, to your point, and they understand that this could not only cause a company reputation damage, but it could cause damage to by the theft of intellectual property, certainly by some sort of corporate espionage. The understanding that with everything connected and employees with mobile devices really having to map out a network and see what's there, I think these decisions are now being taken as part of the overall corporate risk. Which doors do you lock? What do you protect? And prioritizing that with the overall company funds and direction as part of your strategy. And I think you see that empirically with cyber experts being brought to the board level in so many of our larger companies.
And then week three is also fascinating, and it's one of those areas that I think the government doesn't get enough credit for. When you talk about the cybercrime task force at DHS and the roles the TSA and Coast Guard and other parts of DHS play, but I want to go back to the cybercrimes task force piece. One thing about them, and I think we saw that with the Service to America Medal Award winner, someone from the Secret Service for their work within the cybersecurity field actually got recognized with one of those honors. Give me a sense of how are you getting the message out about what DHS does, what you guys can provide? Because I know it's not just about DHS, but it is about the federal government's role in combating cybercrime more broadly.
The Secretary calls it unity of effort. There's a piece of cyber, for example, in all of our components of the department. Department's about 250,000 people. It includes everything from some examples, for example, the Secret Service or the Coast Guard or FEMA or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Patrol. The many different parts of our department all have a large cyber component or a piece of cyber responsibility. And we have, under Secretary Johnson's leadership, brought a lot of that cyber direction together as a department. And part of that has really been noting how the Secret Service's work has shined. I've been involved in cybersecurity many years, long before I came to the department, and was involved, of course, in other efforts and got to see and work with many of the Secret Service's electronic crimes task forces. And those have a very good appeal. They're very effective bringing in private sector to talk through cyber issues, to advise at the state and local level, and to have a group of trusted, knowledgeable corporate citizens that are working with federal government and willing to share information with each other. At the same time, and I had the privilege to visit the New York one a few months ago, these very talented agents have labs, forensics, the most advanced technology to not only track cyber criminals but catch them and look at what the next ideas are that they have to be aware of to protect our citizens, our companies, our global world, and our connected world. And I think it's also in that same light, I've also had an opportunity to work with Homeland Security Investigations, and they do incredible work. And I highlight, you know, removing a lot of those child predators and capturing them and using the best of technology to detect that horrible behavior. And they have as well a history in looking at the dark web and what they call cyber-enabled crime. So not necessarily intruding on a network per se, but using the networks that our good people have built to do things like sell things illegally or even worse. And I think as a department, you know, I spoke with the U.S. Coast Guard this morning about this, as we look at different sectors, whether it's maritime or electricity or water, bringing together all the resources we have to bear in cyber across all those different missions that we have to create that which is Homeland Security. Under Secretary Johnson's leadership and within the National Protection Programs Directorate, really working through the critical infrastructure and cyber piece under Under Secretary Spaulding's leadership, I think we have made tremendous progress that way, and October should highlight that.
When you guys were putting together this Cybersecurity Awareness Month and the themes, how'd you choose those themes? Because I could imagine you start with a list of maybe 100 and have to whittle it down. How do you kind of come up with what you're going to focus on this year versus years past?
This is what I'm going to call a modern Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and with many, many thanks to the National Cybersecurity Alliance, with whom many of the board members are our key private sector companies that either enable or build or work within the IT and cybersecurity and critical infrastructure community. We look at themes that are pertinent now. So many, many years ago, you might have been looking at something like spam, or how do you work with the federal government? And we've, with much help from this crowd, we've overcome that. I think our citizens are getting that message and really do embrace it. So if you look at some of these new themes, Internet of Things, we have an opportunity now, Jason, not only as the Department of Homeland Security, but as the private sector and as a country and manufacturers worldwide, to not make the mistake they made when they developed the Internet, and to this time build security in at the design and at the manufacturing level. And so addressing things with all the way to the general public and certainly all the way to the boardroom, such as this concept of Internet of Things, which really says there's an electronic component to just about anything I can imagine. It builds awareness. It's a very current topic. It's not so futuristic that it doesn't matter and it's science fiction. It's here, and it helps bring your best minds to it. One of the themes they're looking at, for example, on the cybercrime, people are very, very aware of it, but I don't think, to your point earlier, they're aware of all the resources the Department of Homeland Security has, all the resources that the FBI has, and frankly, how well we do work together. And we'd like to highlight that, and we'd like to do things that show cybercrime is illegal. And there are folks out there that are highly trained and highly effective at finding cybercriminals. So when we look at these themes, it's what is on the minds of our citizens today, and where are the areas that we can be most efficient for you as your government?
That's a great roundup of what's going on during the month of October, all the different weeks. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some more specifics around the DHS's work with the federal government. My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications in the National Protection and Programs Directorate. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO in celebration, if you will, of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications. Now, Phyllis, before break, we were talking a lot about National Cybersecurity Awareness Month and basically the themes of the month. Just one last follow-up around that. How is DHS planning to promote all these different weeks and all the different themes you guys are doing to highlight to both industry, to the general public, and, of course, to the federal government?
So if I want to start out by thanking the National Cybersecurity Alliance for many years of their tremendous and heroic efforts in partnering with us at the Department of Homeland Security, bringing your companies and your thought and your culture to bear in an enormous partnership that I believe has forwarded cybersecurity protection. We work across the federal government in numerous ways. We have buy-in from other agencies. The White House actually requests that all agencies participate, and DHS tracks the reported activities from those agencies. One example is last year, the U.S. Postal Service sent National Cybersecurity Awareness Month mailers to all of their employees to promote the month and encourage safe online behavior. And we take these success stories, and then we promote them throughout the year to other agencies for even more support throughout the whole year and into this new one. Many of our federal agencies and the state and local governments are DHS cybersecurity awareness partners. That means they engage with us again throughout the entire year. We share best practices, comprehensive partner packages, customizable content. And again, the department itself has resources within the various states that can offer resilience reviews of networks. We can offer cyber advice. We can offer infrastructure protection advice. Particular to this month, our weekly keynote events are hosted in cities across the country. We take this far beyond Washington. It's a great way to promote the month and bring a wide range of different types of audiences together. So this year we'll have major events in Seattle, Memphis, Tennessee, Los Angeles, New York City, and here in Washington. And these events will often include a panel discussion with experts, brings together industry, academia, government, other stakeholders, and they talk about the very relevant, timely cyber issues and how we can combat cyber incidents. And this is very important, we appeal to build out the cyber career pipeline. We take those opportunities when you're out and about all over the country to get in front of the next crop of who the experts are and who they're going to be and encourage them to come into this field. And we can talk some about this later. It's very important to us to make it easier for the best minds to come into government and help us do this.
Let's shift away from National Cybersecurity Awareness Month more broadly, and let's just focus our conversation now on the federal government's efforts. Specifically, there's two big programs that I think a lot of agencies are focused on. It's the Einstein 3A effort with a big December deadline, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
We are.
And, of course, the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, the CDM program. Talk a little bit about where those two programs are, how they fit together, and where do you see the agencies going over the next, 3, 6, 9 months?
Okay, and I'm going to decling on those names for a moment. Einstein 3A is a long way of saying this is intrusion prevention. So this is technology that will block bad things, if you will, as they come into federal agency networks. And that is, I understand that people say, and they're right, that is an older technology. It's like your measles vaccine. You still need it, and this system's special in that we can use classified information to block that. We do expect agencies to have other intrusion detection and prevention and layered defense across the cybersecurity spectrum. This is not your only defense. This is a very special system that will detect things that no one else will on classified info, and it will block them from getting in. As of 15 September 2016, 103 federal civilian departments and agencies and their subcomponents are participating in E3A services. And so another number that represents about 65% of the .gov population. While DHS continues to work towards the timelines outlined in the cyber legislation for all federal departments and agencies, we have emphasized CFO Act agencies, and those are the larger ones with critical mission space. And we're actively engaged with the remaining agencies and anticipate that all the CFO Act agencies will be receiving protection under E3A. So that's intrusion prevention with classified information by the 18 December deadline. And so it's important to note, to defend the government, the federal government, against this increasingly sophisticated threat that we all hear about every day, DHS is piloting, in addition, analytics. So if you consider the existing systems to be vaccines, if you will, we're now creating, and this is the vision I laid out when I came in, we're creating an immune system in addition. And so one way that we've done that is creating a cyber risk scoring system using data that we can purchase from the private sector, and we do, but also using data that we uniquely see across the federal government with the help of our privacy and civil liberties experts, only the data that's needed for this, only the data we're lawfully allowed to have, and only data that's across the federal civilian government. By using that, plus data that the private sector sees protecting their hundreds of millions of customers every day, we're able to come up with a crowdsourced cyber risk score of, for example, different machine addresses or, in the future, domains, and assess severity, and then use that to also block things using the Einstein program. Whereas before, it would have to have been the attack we would block would have to have been previously known. You would have had to have had a vaccine or, in the industry, called a signature. Now, heuristically, we can begin to identify things that we may not know yet are bad, but behaviorally, we can sense that they are. So this is brand new technology, and we're already testing that in production with very, very good results. I do want to, though, again, stress that E3A is not a silver bullet. Perimeter defense is just one layer in a multi-layer strategy. We expect every agency to have commercial intrusion prevention or other intrusion prevention that looks at the other things that are not covered by classified information. E3A initially focused on countermeasures that will address about 85% of the most significant cyber threats. We are evolving that, and we're growing that, but our first priority is getting our CFO Act agencies online with the protection. The more agencies that are online, the more federal agency data that we can see and then heuristically defend against and identify and eventually block attacks that we did not know yet were bad, and that's how your body's immune system works. Biologically, your body knows it's bad, and chemically, it attacks something that's there to hurt you. We have to do that with math. So Einstein is full force forward. It is currently as we said it always would be, being used already as a platform to bring in new private sector technologies. For example, the data we're buying to help us do the cyber risk scores in combination with government-furnished information that we can get from our awesome partners in the intelligence community that declassify information for us to use this way as well as the situational awareness we get from protecting all those federal agencies. So your Einstein perimeter defense is alive and well. It's one of many, many layers. It's necessary but not sufficient, and it's already being used as a platform to bring in the new innovations from private sector.
All right, Phyllis, let me jump in before we get on to CDM, because there's a couple things I want to back up on and definitely want to talk about the cyber risk scoring system. But before I do that, one of the recent news items that we've all kind of looked at is a letter from a member of Congress asking for more information from the agency, this one specifically IRS, about some challenges they're having with Einstein. I'm not going to ask you to address the IRS's challenges because that's for the IRS to do. I understand that. But are there some challenges, generally speaking, that agencies are facing with E3A? I've heard Andy Osmond speak several times to say, hey, agencies, don't wait till November to call us and say, okay, we're ready now for Einstein, because we're not going to be able to handle that volume in 1 month or 3 weeks, or whatever it is. But are there other challenges that's going on that DHS is trying to address? And
also, I don't know that it'll stop them from hitting the deadline. I do know that cyber moves fast. Cyber moves faster than people. That's why we have intrusion issues, because instructions come flying in for your memory to put on the list and your processor executes them because it doesn't know any better, and boom, you're owned. When we think about cultures that change, I believe there are some agencies that think that their data is too sensitive to have the system on it. I also know that the law that was passed at the end of 15 says that all agencies do need to connect to the systems because it's in their best interest, in their data's best interest, and in the overall protection of U.S. government and private sector best interest. So I am very optimistic we'll work through that, but it's very understandable as cultures change. Human policy needs to adapt to that.
And generally speaking, have you experienced any specific challenges you're able to address? I mean, I know the data issue is one thing. For instance, I've heard years ago the Commerce Department, the Census Bureau, had some concerns, but that was worked out through a memorandum of understanding. Is that the type of thing that's happening to kind of push through? Is that you just have to meet with that agency, whether it's the IRS or whomever, and work out those, okay, yes, we have the ability, yes, you're comfortable with how we're going to use the data, what we're going to use the data for? Is that part of that culture change?
I think it's all part of that culture change. Absolutely.
Let me also talk about the other piece of this, which is you talked about creating the cyber risk scoring system. You said it's being piloted. How much can you talk about the pilots? Can you talk about the types of agencies or specific agencies that are using it? And then what are you getting from it? You get a risk score, and then what happens? Give me a little bit more if you can.
And it's a unique ability that we have as the Department of Homeland Security to take data that comes from, there must be 50 companies, if not more, that collect a set of data that's a byproduct of their actual products, whether it's a piece of software or appliance. They're seeing cyber activity from all over the world based on their customer footprint. We have an ability at DHS that single companies often don't, to combine data from various sources and sort of get a score that reflects more than one opinion, crowdsourced because there are so many. And then we can add that to data that corporate America does not have, so information that's unique to government, a lot of which comes from our ability to see activity as we protect the federal civilian government. We see all of the, at a metadata level, we see all the data coming in and out of the federal agencies. So we're able to look at behavior, for example, of a certain machine address across that set in addition to what the private sector has. And our intelligence community has been just amazing partners in helping us. They are declassifying a lot of information now for us and giving it to us in a way that we can now incorporate into things like a risk score and other things. So, for example, if you have a machine with a certain score on a scale of, say, 1 to 10, you can now use that in a couple of ways. If it's really bad, for example, a 10, you might want to choose to, if a traffic comes in from that address aimed out of one of our federal agencies, that might indicate to you that that agency was instructed by malware to reach out to a bad place, and you would want to flag that. Now, in the future, we may use that score to block it. What we're doing right now is testing it, so we would not issue a block on that yet. We're looking at how accurate it is. It's actually very accurate, but that's not enough. We strive for excellence, and we're refining that. We're sharpening it. It's brand new. But this is a first and a giant step toward being able to identify activity that indicates bad behavior or the presence of malware or data exfiltration long before it would have shown up otherwise and without the need for a signature.
I think that's key, though, no need for a signature, because sometimes once you have a signature, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm no expert in that type of cybersecurity, that's sometimes too late. Once you know that there's a signature, there's a problem. Do I have that kind of right?
That's true. You make a vaccine because you already know about the disease, and that means that somebody already got sick from it, likely a lot of people.
Are you guys, you're testing this out with agencies? Are you able to give us any kind of sense of big agencies, small agencies, components of agencies? Any more details around that?
We're looking at the larger traffic set and just tracking the accuracy. You'd never put something into production unless it had excellent accuracy. It's almost there, but it's not where we put it at. We wouldn't actually issue block on that yet.
Okay. And then, but this is being tested out, and obviously the results so far are good. And is there any kind of time frame, like if for instance you'd like to maybe start getting this into a beta test with an agency in early 2017? Any thoughts about that yet?
So it doesn't go in the agencies. It's another tool we have in the Einstein system. And once we truly believe, again, we're almost there, it's good, but because we are who we are and we do what we do, it's not going to be used until it's absolutely excellent. And once it's there, it will advise the Einstein system to block on things for which there was not a previous signature.
Okay. I appreciate that. I want to be clear about what it is, because a lot of people hear software and then you'll get the 101 calls from vendors.
It's just a data set that is helping advise decisions.
Excellent, excellent. Good summary. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can get into the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program. My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications and the National Protection and Programs Directorate. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO in celebration of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications and the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Phyllis, we talked a lot about Einstein. The other piece of the initiative, the big initiative that DHS is really working on, is the CDM program, Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program. Give us an update on CDM.
Oh, we love this program. So CDM is an ability for us to make available to our federal agencies the new innovative products from the private sector. So where Einstein protects like a fence, the outside of a network, CDM puts the latest and greatest technologies on the inside of the network. And even better, it brings in technologies that talk to each other. So they're constantly monitoring and measuring on different statistics for the security health, if you will, of those agency networks. And these programs are interconnected. So CDM, once deployed in an agency, can communicate with our Einstein data in our NCIC, our National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center, just like the movies, a big dark room, lots of screens, but we do use our screens, and really looking at how we combine data from the inside and outside of an agency. At a very high level, we do provide also what they call a dashboard. So instead of making a binder at the end of the year for an agency to say how compliant or secure they are, that really measures the security posture for an hour, we look at the ability for an agency to constantly monitor and mitigate their security posture, and then we have a copy of the dashboard for each agency in our operations center, so we can look across each one. If you have what seems like a small event in an agency that did not raise radar eyebrows in the one agency, but we see it replicated three or four times across the government, it may very likely be a much larger event, and that will help us, again, mitigate that, address it, identify it, and draw awareness to it much, much more quickly. So at the tactical level, CDM contractors are now actively deploying the solution set for what they call phase one. And those are the tools, again, tools that we've enabled on a very cost-effective contract for agencies to buy. And these tools for phase one focus on what is on your network. So we're beginning that deployment, and we're beginning that deployment for 23 civilian, the CFO Act agencies, the big ones with a large mission, critical mission, including the Department of Homeland Security. So we actually use our own programs. We road test them hard here. Other contractors are designing the shared services approach to cover for CDM phase one, who's on the network, for 44 other agencies that are not the biggest ones, but we're trying to get most of the agencies as we do this. And those contractors and shared services should also cover phase two. And in addition, another contractor is completing a proposed architecture to provide additional tools to provide management for privileged users to access those participating agencies. We have made the CDM phase one, and they call it asset management. I'm going to call it who's on your network. available already to 97% of the federal civilian workforce. This program has added tools and sensors, if you will, to the CDM. They call it a blanket purchase agreement. That's government Klingon for saying it's a contract, and we have done that at scale so that these tools are more affordable, we believe, than if you bought them singly without this program. And then the president's proposed FY17 budget will include $275 million for CDM.
One thing about CDM, and when you talk about phase one, is I know that DHS headquarters was the first one really to start rolling out the phase one tools. Have DHS MPPD moved beyond the just DHS headquarters to roll out CDM? Are you starting to roll it out in some of the other groups of agencies now?
We're in the deployment phase. Yeah, so there are several parts to that. You can bring the products, but this is not easy, right? This is network infrastructure. So bringing them into the agency, having them installed to the point where they're actually talking to a dashboard, that's a task that takes a while. But we are now actively deploying that solution set across the federal government. And again, we're in the early stages. DHS, of course, was first so that we could actually look at the technology and be using it here, and we could experience any of the challenges first.
Because I know one of the big, I don't want to say complaints, because I think everyone was very in favor of the CDM program, was just how long it was taking to roll out. I know some agencies and CIOs and CISOs have told me, I'm excited, I can't wait, but I can't wait either because I need to renew or make a decision. So it's good news that phase one is starting to roll out. Do you have a deadline internally that you'd like to say we'd like to finish phase one rollout by a certain date?
We want to get that out as quickly as possible because there should be some excitement about that. So I'm not aware of a deadline by which it has to be done. There are two things I've learned in government in the 3 years I've been here, and I've loved every minute of it, but I have learned, number one, nothing moves as fast as you want it to, but that's because it's done right, not fast. You know, and the second part is it really is not just up to us. We can deploy the tools, we can do the selection of the best tools, but it really is up to the agencies on their schedule and on their priorities when they actually install things.
Has CDM gone, you know, when you talk about as smoothly as you hope, there's always hiccups. As you said, you started with DHS internally to experience some of the challenges and then overcome them. Is there one or two lessons that you can point to say, because we had this challenge at DHS, we're not going to have this challenge at other agencies? Because even though every network is different, there's never one in the same networks, there may be some common themes that you're looking at that you say we can overcome this way now?
There is nothing so egregious that it's going to run across every deployment. You said it best, Jason. Every network is different. I will tell you, we are lucky at DHS. We have a CIO office and a CISO office that are, first of all, top-notch technically, but secondly, they go to great lengths to give us very, very good and comprehensive feedback. So we are able to take a lot of it. They will dig into our programs. They will see how they work. They will test us. And so then we come out with a much more refined product.
The other piece of this that you mentioned was the dashboards, and I know you guys have made an award for a contract to put out the agency dashboards. Any update you can give us on how those are happening? Do agencies are getting access to those dashboards yet, or is that dependent on getting past phase one, and then the dashboards get populated with the data from phase one tools?
Those are progressing, but I am excited about it because I just this morning had a flat tire, and my own dashboard showed me the tire pressure going downward at an amazing speed, and I knew to pull over. In the older cars, one of which I used to have, had a light that went on when the battery died. So I look at that experience and I say, we really are excited about giving agencies something that gives them enough data that they know exactly what's going on and gives them enough time to identify things and work through them. And the exact timing of the deployment, I think a lot of that will be based on not only contracting process, some of which we have control over, some of which we don't, but certainly the agency's priorities and how they want to roll this out so that they can keep running and doing their specific mission and also make these very worthy upgrades to the networks.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, there's a few other things I definitely want to catch up with you on before we let you go. My guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and my guest is Phyllis Schneck, the Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications in the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Has DHS already started talking about what comes next after CDM? Because I know you guys have looked at Task Order 3 or Phase 3. You have Phase 4 in place. Talk a little bit about what those phases look like, and then maybe are there some lessons learned? Because if you think about it, you made these awards for CDM, I think it was August of 2013, you made the initial awards. here we are, October 2016. So 3 years later, lots of changes happen. Are you guys starting to think about what CDM will look like in the future?
Well, you have phase one being what's on your network, two being who is on the network from an identity perspective. And then you start looking going out, you say to yourself, what is the next thing that I need to look at and protect? And then so you think about three, if I know who and what, my next thought is what is happening on the network from an event perspective. You know, and looking outward, really want to keep things adaptive and understanding that these programs, first and foremost, they interconnect. They share data with each other, so your perimeter defense in Einstein will grow and contribute to your internal defense, your CDM. Both will provide cyber threat, what we call indicators or raw materials, not any kind of personal information, but things like here's a machine address that we worry about or here's a hash of a piece of malware that we worry about. And we have an advanced, an automated indicator sharing system in our operations center that was authorized in March, and of course in the legislation as well, that says we will be sharing those threat indicators, many of which we can derive from the interconnection of these programs. So what's next will really likely take some derivative from what we're learning from these programs, how technology itself is growing, which lends credibility and help to all of the partnerships that we have across the private sector. We have to be adaptable. This is not yesterday's government. We will not spend 10 years building technology to deliver 5 years late. We look to leverage and enable the markets to buy the best and most innovative of products from the private sector and let those companies get rich, innovating ways that we can use their work combined with information and capabilities that are unique to government to really capture this cybersecurity problem and enable great technology forward and truly look at how we can be more proactive.
Phyllis, during this conversation, which has been fascinating so far, we've talked a lot about the threat and the ever-growing threat and how cybersecurity is not a static thing. It's very dynamic. And one of the things that DHS is doing is putting together these red team and blue team. And one of the things that I know Andy Osmond has talked about from your office several times is wanting to increase the number of teams to as many as 24 next year. Talk a little bit about those red team, blue team efforts, and what are you seeing from those teams going into agencies to help them with cybersecurity?
So these are some of our most talented cyber ninjas. We call them the NCATS team, NCATS, National Cybersecurity Assessment and Technical Services, and they offer cybersecurity scanning and testing services to federal and non-federal entities, so private sector, and provides remediation and mitigation recommendations to help those entities improve their network security posture. So I'll give you some examples. Fiscal year 2014, NCATS teams expanded their service scope beyond the federal agencies, and that's when they started including organizations across the private sector in our critical infrastructure sectors, so banking, finance, water, rail, emergency services, and others, electricity. So while we don't release these specific names of our stakeholders, trust is our currency, they typically fit into those sectors to include academia, chemical companies. And in the past few years, the team has worked with more than 60 different private sector companies. To give you some numbers, our requests for NCAT services have increased, obviously, over the last few years, as you can imagine. What we call a cyber hygiene vulnerability scan is something we can offer. We do it remotely. We'll do that for any of these folks. It's been requested 86 times by about just over 30 stakeholders in fiscal year 2013. In 14, we had 384 requests from 68 stakeholders in 2014, so they repeat these. And 2015 brought almost 5,000 requests for these scans from 191 stakeholders in 2015. So on the risk and vulnerability assessment, which was much, much more comprehensive, that puts the team onto the network. So again, you're not doing it just from the outside, you're on the network. That was requested 25 times in 2013. 39 times in 2014, and up to 48 in 2015. I don't have the numbers, obviously, for this full year yet. But the demand right now exceeds our current resources that we can provide. That team is stretched, but they are incredible. That leads to why we're really working on how you not only build the pipeline to get these great minds in the cyber workforce, but how you maintain them, how do you retain them, how do you build a career path here where they can take leadership roles in management, but still maintain their technical savvy and the technical work that they love. The president included an increase to these teams in his proposed FY17 budget, and we hope that new budget will give us those additional resources. This is a very, very important resource to the country.
This is also being done for federal agencies. Are you getting a sense that people are more aware of cybersecurity? That's why the requests are going up. Is the problem worse? Is that why the requests are going up? Do you have any sense of why you guys are so popular?
Yes. There are more vulnerabilities, and people really are, again, this is culture changing again. Owners and operators of networks want to understand where the vulnerabilities are so that they can fix them ahead of any problems. You always want to know. Information is power. You want to know where your problems are so that you can fix that. And for us, it's very valuable because we can identify, of course, without using the stakeholder names, we can identify patterns and problems and use that to protect others.
Great stuff that's going on. A lot of initiatives. And I know we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately, Phyllis, we're out of time. This is, again, fascinating conversation. Really appreciate it. My guest has been Phyllis Schneck, Homeland Security Department's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications and the National Protection and Programs Directorate. This was a special edition of Ask the CIO in celebration of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Phyllis, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you so much for your interest in this. And we look very forward to October with you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.